She's to sick bay. The doctor should look at it as soon as possible.
It is the way in which we propagate our species. Please demonstrate how this is accomplished.
So, what's next?
Hi, and welcome to Casual Track, a Star Trek recap and ranking podcast brought to you by Nerd and Tie and Unspeakable Profanity. I'm Charlie Etheridge Nunn, a writer and a Merry White House Experience fan.
And I'm Miles Reed Lobato, a writer, and I'm a fan of video nasties.
Yeah! I don't know if I've ever seen a video nasty.
Oh, let's have a look at the list, which I had. Okay, let's see. Driller Killer.
Nope.
I Spit in Your Grave.
No.
Zombie Flesh Eaters.
Seen Zombie Rednecks, but not Zombie Flesh Eaters. Anyway, this isn't a show where we just list video nasties. It is a show where we have a big list of Star Trek shows and films on a big list of best to worst. And each episode, we watch a couple of them and decide where they sit on that list. We both love Star Trek, but it is far from our first fandom, which makes us the ultimate objective voices on such a task. And this episode, we're having a look at some of the older episodes, and specifically ones which have been banned from UK airwaves. Miles, you brought this to us as a topic. What is up with the banning of these episodes?
Well, it turns out that after their original broadcast in the 60s, these three episodes and a fourth TNG which we will pass on weren't ever shown in again until the 90s. An official BBC statement by Sheila Cundy of the Programme Correspondence section reads, after very careful consideration, was not to screen the episodes entitled Whom the Gods Destroy, Plato's Stepchildren, and Miri, because they all dealt most unpleasantly with the already unpleasant subject of madness, torture, sadism, and disease. You know, because imagine what a wonderful world it would be if we didn't talk about the problems that, you know, affect people in our society.
Yeah, so they banned all the good stuff.
All the juicy stuff.
Yeah, although there are a number of episodes outside of those four that deal with a lot of that already. So, yeah, I guess it's the kind of thing where we're going to have a bit of a look, bit of an explore as to what these episodes were and why they were banned. But first of all, Miles, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying since we last spoke?
I purchased a game for my PlayStation, which is the 2016 version of Doom. It's been what I've kind of been craving, which is a game where I just need to rip and tear and destroy without any kind of plot stuff, but, you know, nothing too complicated. You are the Doom guy. Your mission is to kill all the demons because an evil corporation opened a portal to hell, and yes,
You've done Doom.
I've done Doom.
You've done Doom.
Shit.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, hell.
Oh, dear.
Okay.
I get the instinct to rip and tear, given our tech issues currently.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
I've got one. I went to see a movie.
Oh, yes.
And the movie was Alien Romulus.
Ooh. Okay.
The film was very enjoyable. It is the latest in the Alien series. And yeah, I have a few issues.
Yeah.
I did feel that it was kind of going dangerously close to kind of just trying to do a reboot sequel by essentially redoing the first film. It didn't do that. There were a lot of callbacks, which were the parts of the film which were the weakest. But on the whole, it was a satisfying entry in the franchise. And I hope that we get to see more from the characters it introduced. And if you want to hear more thoughts, you could join the Breakfast in the Ruins Patreon, because of course I did.
Of course.
But yeah, like, if you want a decent sci-fi horror film, I would honestly say it's well worth your time.
Emma and I ended up at a loose end the other night and watched it. And she's not a massive alien person. I am. And yeah, there were some bits that I really loved. And there were a couple of flaws in it. I was going in not expecting a huge amount. So I figured, well, we ended up auto playing the half in the bag episode on Alien Romulus. And they were not positive. But I guess they were never going to be positive with it.
Red Letter Media not being positive about a film? What a shock.
I know. Yeah. I think in a way that predisposed Emma to being wary about it. And I expected less than I got. Like, I loved the technology. I loved the horror of Weyland-Yutani being a bit more present. But yeah, there were some referential moments that really could have done with not being there.
Yeah. And admittedly, as someone who has been in America for far too long, it was so lovely to see a film where you see some stupid British lads be stupid and kind of get what was coming to them.
Oh, they were very stupid.
Like, there are two kind of lads you kind of expect to bump into on a Friday night, and they're smashing something with a pipe.
Yeah, I remember after, I think it was after a bad game or a good game, it's pretty much the same either way, in the Euro 2004, seeing someone just smashing a computer monitor apart in the street with a bit of wood.
Ah, England, we don't have problems.
Oh, yeah.
And so, Charlie, what non-Star Trek thing have you been enjoying?
Well, I have been enjoying the game that came with the PS5 for free, called Astro's Playroom, which it's very much a brand the game for all things Sony, but it's still a really nicely made third-person 3D platformer experience. It controls very smoothly. Astro makes all sorts of great noises via the controller and the haptic feedback, which is new to me because technology and all that, is great fun. It's also the first ever PlayStation game that I've platinumed. I was pretty chuffed with that. I don't know. Sometimes when a game says, oh yeah, look at these trophies, and I go, yeah, okay, I could platinum this, and then realize it would mean replaying it yet again. Or anything, it's put me off. But this one was a nice one.
Yeah, I generally don't go into games wanting to try and like platinum them or earn the awards and acknowledgements, achievements. Because I'll be honest, I play games like Elden Ring, where like if you survive 5 minutes, achievements unlocked, you've gotten a bit good.
Yeah. I don't know. I like them as a bit of a measure of things that aren't just following the direct path. And sometimes they let you have a bit more of an explore around the game and the world, which is quite nice. One of my old friends, back when I was working at a bank, he wasn't a good gamer. His username on Xbox Live was Gash Bandit. So he was that kind of gamer, but
he was a classy son of a bitch is what I'm hearing.
Yes. So he was an odd man, but I helped talk him down from just being a COD and FIFA person, and he started trying other games and really enjoying kind of the wide variety.
Okay, when you say you talked him off FIFA, did he just switch to John Madden?
No, well, the people at the Blasted Heath, so many of them were like, I'm not a gamer, but I will buy every FIFA and every Call of Duty because everyone does it. That kind of level of gamer. So actually getting him to explore beyond that was good fun. And we were both getting into that thing of, okay, completing the game, like, when is a game done? And it was very much like when we're finished with the story, and generally like over halfway through the achievements, you can normally find yourself at peace going, I don't need 100% everything, but I've done these bits and pieces, and that's quite nice. So yeah, he continued being Gash Bandit and had a mate that was Clint Bandit.
Was his mate Mark Millar?
No, luckily not.
All right, Gash Bandit aside, we have two episodes of Star Trek to talk about this week.
Yeah, the first episode of our band episodes is from Star Trek The Original Series, Season 1, Episode 11, titled Miri. It's from the 27th of October 1966, written by Adrian Spies and directed by Vincent McAvity. The UK number one hit was Jim Reeves with Distant Drums, and the US had The Four Tops with Reach Out, I'll Be There. I'm pretty sure we've had both of these before, and Four Tops are quite like...
No, I'd have to agree. The trouble is, like, you're right, I've probably like heard these ones before, but for some reason, I was like, Reach Out, I'll Be There sounds like a film, a song that you're going to find on a track in a Tarantino movie.
Yeah, it might be a little early for a Tarantino, but yeah, there's definitely that feeling. Yeah, with Jim Reeves's one, like, it's all right, but also, while it sounds a little kind of funereal, I gather it came out before he actually died and wasn't intended as a kind of last song, I think. Yeah, I've realised with us covering mostly things from the 60s, it's going to be either some classics or some really iffy music that we'll be covering.
At least this, you know, with these, we can't complain about being in old man mode like we are for a lot of modern songs.
Yeah, on that note, Mars, I believe you are recapping a story about the very young and the very old here. So, if you're ready, you've got 5 minutes.
Yep.
And Miles, it's time for you to grow up now.
The Enterprise has found a planet that looks exactly like Earth. What luck! Not just an Earth-type planet, but it's completely Earth. There's America. There's Australia. There's Whitehawk. Don't go there. Detecting an Earth-type SOS, Kirk, Spock, Yeoman Rand, Bones, and two meat shields. You know what I mean. Beam down to find a desolated city street, looking just like an American city of the early 20th century. Although, I'm honestly still not ruling out Whitehawk. Finding a destroyed bicycle, Kirk is immediately attacked by a swollen purple-faced creature who screams madly that the bike is his before he soon dies of a seizure. A loud noise brings the landing party to a deserted building where they find a young girl called Miri who had been fleeing them. She refers to them as Grups. While Spock and the guards scout out the nearby streets, they hear the taunting cries of children. Back in the abandoned building, Kirk turns on the charm in a kind of creepy way with Miri to get her to open up.
Mm.
Everyone warns Kirk that this is going to be a bad idea, but Kirk just fobs him off, believing that Miri simply wants the comfort of a supporting adult presence. Bad idea, Kirk. Miri explains that on this planet, all the adults, which she calls Grups, went mad and died of a plague, leaving only the planet's children, which they call themselves Onlys, before they died of the plague. Kirk tries to get directions to a records building, but Miri notices a blue lesion on Kirk's hand. Kirk is starting to succumb to the same plague that drove the Grups to madness and death. Finding the automated distress signal and a stock laboratory at the building Miri guided them to, the whole of the landing party, apart from Spock, has started to contract the blue splotches. Bones has the Enterprise beam down important equipment, and members of the crew volunteer to come down and help, but Kirk doesn't want to risk any more lives. Miri reveals that the disease affects you faster the older you are, and Bones is coming down with the disease pretty quickly. The virus is the result of a life prolongation project, the attempt by the planet's population to increase their lifespan. They deduce that Spock's half-Vulcan biology is unaffected by the disease. Spock theorizes that the children remain immune until puberty, and then the disease will start to affect and kill them. Spock also surmises that Miri is staying with them as she's reaching puberty, and also clearly attracted to Captain Kirk. And Kirk's like, no, 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 she's not attracted to me. Also, they realize that the life prolongation only ages the children 1 month for 100 years. Miri is actually 300 years old. I watch anime, guys. Even if she's actually 300 years old, it's still creepy. Rand thinks that Miri knows the truth, surmising that the children might be more savvy, while Kirk doesn't believe so. But much to Rand's jealousy, Kirk takes Miri to try and find the other children. In a desolate toy shop, the gang of children, led by the teenage John, plan to steal the landing party's communicators, trapping them on the planet. Kirk and Miri enter the toy shop and attacked by another one of the disease-ridden creatures. Kirk stuns her, but she dies of her wounds. Miri recognizes her as the friend, Luis, not much older than her, and throws herself into Kirk's arms, crying. Using the records of the last scientist, Spock is able to predict how much time they all have left. Miri has weeks, and while Spock is immune to the disease, he carries the plague and doesn't want it to spread back to the Enterprise. The others have 7 days left to live. 2 days of searching and working have found nothing until McCoy finds half of a formula that could give him and Spock something to potentially build a working vaccine. The children create a distraction for Jean to steal the communicators. Now they have no contact with the Enterprise, and more importantly, no contact with the Enterprise's computers and no chance of properly deriving an antidote. As the disease ravages Kirk, McCoy, and Rand, they've also discovered that the local food supplies are starting to run out. The children are more likely to starve to death before the disease kills them. Tempers are fraying and Rand breaks down, showing Kirk the lesions covering her body, admitting that she always wanted Kirk to look at her legs. Miri watches the two embrace as Kirk tries to comfort Rand, realizing finally that Kirk only sees her.
Oh dear. Okay, that's 5 minutes, and before we deteriorate, let's carry on.
Realizing that Kirk only sees her as a child, Miri flees back to John and the others. McCoy finds a slide containing the original disease. Now it's a race to the finish. With the children, Miri plans to trick and capture Rand so she'll be able to steal Kirk all for herself. With hours left, McCoy and Spock think they have a vaccine, but they want to check it with the ship's computers. They need the communicators. Kirk tells Miri the truth about the disease and that this is the only chance they have to save the children. Miri refuses to believe Kirk until Kirk shows her that she too has the Blue Legion. She has the disease. At an abandoned school, the Onlys plan to kill Rand, but Miri and Kirk arrive. Miri pleads with John to listen to Kirk, but John and the others refuse to listen, wanting to play their bonk, bonk, bonk games. Kirk tells them that without the communicators, without the help of Kirk, then all the Onlys will soon die, leaving an empty dead planet. But the kids fall on Kirk with sticks and hammers. A bruised and bloodied Kirk still pleads for help, imploring that as the Onlys die, soon only the youngest and the most helpless will be left, and that the Onlys' violence is turning them into the grubs long before the disease can ever affect them. McCoy, not wanting to wait any longer, plans to inject himself with the antidote. Spock wants to wait, but makes the mistake of leaving McCoy alone, and McCoy just injects himself with a potential beaker full of death, and collapses in pain. Kirk, Miri, and the Onlys return to see that McCoy's splotches are fading away. The antidote works! Hooray! Now everyone is cured. The Enterprise is leaving orbit with a medical team behind on the planet, and they've sent a message to Starfleet to send a team of teachers and advisors to help the Onlys rebuild their society. When Rand comments that Miri really loved Kirk, Kirk merely replies that he doesn't get involved with older women and hopes that no one's knocking on his door to ask him some questions about Miri.
Wow, that's 2 minutes and 2 seconds over. And
If I say I actually like this episode, does that get me put on the list somewhere?
I was wondering if this is one of the first uses of the "this child is actually, you know, several hundred years old, so that's all right" kind of thing. It's there were some really awkward moments in this episode, and aside from that, it was good fun.
I think the actress Kim Darby, who plays Miri, was only 19 19, but I think she's meant to be like appearing 13, but the actress is still young enough that it is a little bit off-putting through 2024 eyes when Kirk puts on the Kirk charm.
There are definitely some, like the pilot from Airplane talking to that little boy about, you know, do you ever watch movies about gladiators? Kind of feeling coming from Kirk at times.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it was actually quite nice seeing him outside. You know, we see so much from on sound stages and all that. And there's light, which, I don't know. I feel like we've not seen as much.
It's nice to see them on a backlot, probably like somewhere like the studios. But the little leaps of logic they have to kind of hand wave away where they are is a bit ridiculous. Like, oh yes, it's an exact duplicate of Earth with complete parallel development in architecture and people and naming conventions.
Yeah, that is a bit weird. And an Earth style signal, which felt quite awkward as a line early on with it. How many of these civilizations have we found where they've tried to do immortality and it's all gone awry? Because this feels worryingly common.
In Star Trek or science fiction in general?
I mean, Star Trek primarily, I guess. But...
because I believe when this episode was airing in the US, in the UK, on Doctor Who, we are having, Earth is having an encounter with Earth's exact twin planet Mondas, which looks exactly like Earth, and it's populated by a race of people who, in order to prolong their lives, have turned themselves into Cybermen.
Oh. Yeah, that feels like a bad move.
Yeah. And, like, you know, whenever, you know, I don't think there's ever been a science fiction or a fantasy story where it's gone, yeah, we work to enhance our lifestyle, our lifespans using science, and it turned out great.
Well, yeah, Space 1999 had a lot of those.
Oh yeah. we look back to our Space 1999 episode to see how weird it just gets at all points, but not even Space 1999 got this weird, although if we saw Martin Landau having to be charming to a 19-year-old, it would be far creepier than,
William Shatner. There are a couple of moments where it's like, okay, is he just being a bit paternal? And a few more where it's like, do we need to get the police involved? But yeah, Landau would be a lot worse.
Yeah, and that's no disrespect to Martin Landau.
No.
Like at all points, Kirk is like, no. This isn't weird. It's not weird at all. And Spock and McCoy and Rand are going, this is weird. This is kind of creepy.
Yeah, I don't think we've seen a massive amount of Rand in this. We've seen her in a couple of appearances. But yeah, it was interesting seeing her kind of actually on a mission outside. And I know, looking at the cast list, it looks like some of the cast were her kids as well.
Yeah, they have a lot of the kids of some of the actors just playing the onlys. I believe Rand, that Grace Lee Whitney leaves the show soon after, and the character was written out due to, according to reports, that she was sexually harassed by a member of the production crew. Ooh, that never named who.
Oh God!
Yeah. Right.
Oh dear. Yeah, and on a lighter note from that, cast-wise, having a look through, I also saw, as well as having a couple of Shatner kids and a couple of Roddenberry kids, John looked weirdly familiar, and I had to have a look up of who he was, and Michael J. Pollard, the actor there, was in Scrooged, and is...
Oh!
Yeah! Like, he's got a very unique face. He looks a lot odder and older than he was playing in this. But yeah, he's the homeless guy who freezes to death in Scrooge.
Oh, wow, really?
Like, oh my God. Okay. Yeah. Damn. I couldn't believe I couldn't put that together until I saw his IMDb. But yeah, and God, the kid that was the bonk bonk on the head. It's like he was having far too much fun.
Yeah, like I love it when like science fiction or fantasy or horror kind of goes for like the creepy kids vibe, because usually it succeeds, and I feel this is a good collection of droogs in waiting.
Yeah, as childish as they all are, it does feel like, are these kids just going to pull apart Kirk? You know, like, when they surround him and he is doing his best not to punch a child, but...
Yeah, they just fall on him and start just tearing the crap out of him. Like, this is one of those occasions where Kirk is properly, like, bleeding. Yeah.
And, of course, you know, gets a bit of a classic shirt tearing going on as well.
He is ripping so many shirts in this episode.
Yeah, it was good fun. The Grupp mange had an interesting look to it. Like, it felt odd where some of them were kind of attacked and growing. And there, in my notes, I do have, like, Jim, stop picking at it. Because, yeah, it felt like he was just worrying it and making it worse.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Hmm.
You know when Spock basically goes, we can't inject ourselves with the antidote, and then promptly leaves.
But just before Bones entirely does that.
Yeah, do you think Spock was just like, I'm just going to leave this here. I'm going to step outside and let nature take its course.
Ooh. See, maybe. I think it would be the logical thing to do to let Bones do it, and specifically to tell Bones no.
Yeah.
Because then you know he's going to do it. But I don't know. I think written straight up, he's going to be far too straight-laced and far too kind of all life is important. Even McCoy, despite him constantly using like anti-Vulcan slurs and stuff at me. But yeah, I do quite like that as an idea that maybe he just... let him do it.
I do. There is some good Spock McCoy, especially when tempers get frayed and they're stuck on the like, we generally don't see our heroes trapped for any time longer than, say, like a couple of hours. And there is a passage of a few days. And I like when Kirk and McCoy are clearly starting to get at each other's throats. And you even get Spock, who is still trying to be straight laced, but he's like, I can't go back to the ship, and I want to return to the ship.
Yeah, like, you can see that it's weighing on them all a bit. Especially with Rand, it feels like, as someone that's not normally on an away team, she's beginning to fray a bit. And yeah, just, as ever, that dynamic between Bones and Spock is always good fun, watching them get, like, really irritate each other, despite them both, you know, they are friends, but... fucking hell, like, they both
piss each other off. All right, so before we put this on the big list,
yes,
given the criteria of why this episode was removed from repeats, madness, torture, sadism, and disease, do you think that the BBC had a point? When I did some reading, one of the other parts I came across was they talk about the fact that Star Trek is a show which is mostly watched by, they use the term juveniles, but it's a show that's definitely watched by kids and young audiences. And so,
yeah,
I'm not going to say, did they have a point? Because I believe that consumption of media, especially consumption of media by children, shouldn't just be on like the broadcasters, but also on the parents and the families of what they feel comfortable about their children watching.
Yeah, I feel, while yes, it does cover the unpleasant subject of disease, there's got to have been other illnesses or other kind of other stories with this sort of thing. I can entirely get them going, there's going to have been violence towards children and peril and all that, but...
I think, like, the main thing might be here would be violence from children.
Yeah.
That does kind of feel like that moral guardianship of, oh... These youths and their gangs.
Yeah, I guess in a way, there could be some of that. Like,
reminds me of like one line from *Legal Gentleman* with like the local shop. It's like, "You youths, you come in here in your gangs of one or two."
Yeah, maybe it is that kind of the fear of inciting violence against grubs.
Kids rule, okay?
Yeah, and like 60s, I guess we're getting into some counterculture kind of things. Like, not necessarily with Star Trek on face value, but that's going to be a concern that they
have. 66, so we're definitely getting into like protest movements, the heavier aspects of the counterculture. It's not going to be full on. The dream hasn't died yet.
Yeah, but do you know what also hasn't died yet?
Our hardware setups?
Don't tempt fate. Our big list of Star Trek episodes and films, which currently stands strong at 123 entries, starting all the way up the top with Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan. Then down at number 100, we have Borderland, with some Orion slavers and a wrestler who must be exciting for anyone who cares about wrestling. And then finally, down at the bottom, we have Strange New Worlds' Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach, where quite different things happen to children.
Yeah.
Than in this. Yeah, so
child death is only inferred in this episode. Teen death, on the other hand, we see quite a bit.
Yeah, teen death, adult death, all of that. Kind of almost the opposite of Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach.
I don't think there's any actual adult death. It's just like they hit puberty and then they die of the disease. So if Miri, who is meant to be like 13 or so and entering puberty, is going to like die in like 7 months, then it's still pretty young, actually.
Yeah, I guess. It's just more the actors look like old people the plague-ridden, like, grup mange.
In makeup reminiscent of the Deadites in the first Evil Dead film, when they have a lot less money, and it just kind of looks like, oh yes, lumpy purple makeup.
Lovely. Gotta love some of that lumpy makeup. So, where on our big list should this go? I'm having a look at other TOSs, because, yeah, we got things like The Space Castle with Errand of Mercy, which is another season one episode with Kor and Kirk and weird godlike entities.
I'm actually...
That's currently number 48.
I think this is better.
Okay.
Like, Errand of Mercy is a really good, strong episode, but this has had, like, some really good sci-fi concepts. There's a good, creepy atmosphere. And it's just, you know how we talk about how TNG has that early season one strangeness?
Yeah.
I feel you get a bit of that in early season one of TOS, when they're kind of just working out what the show is. This is one of those plots I feel that they're testing the waters of what they can and can't show and get away with. And I don't know. I kind of like I like the tone. I like the passage of time. I like the fact that we get to see the characters not be the square-jawed heroes. Like, you see Kirk's temper frayed. McCoy's temper is always frayed, but here more so. I don't know. I feel like this is a stronger story.
There's something about it, and I don't know if it's just the 1960s Earth backlot with bits of ruination and such, but it makes me think of things like The Twilight Zone.
Yeah.
Or anything like that. And, you know, we've got our recurring cast, but at the same time, some of these premises have that vibe to them of like a Twilight Zone episode or a Future Shock or something.
I feel this would definitely be more in terms of like the other sci-fi TV at the time. I feel this would be much more in line with the original Outer Limits.
Yeah.
Which generally, like, have you ever seen either The Twilight Zone or The Outer Limits?
I've seen the classic Twilight Zone and the 90s Outer Limits.
Because, like, the 60s Outer Limits, on the most part, has a very kind of a much darker tone than I feel like at times the Twilight Zone, which is much more uplifting. And generally had, like, I would say, you know, better production value. I would feel this would be much more in line with the Outer Limits, especially, like, you know, the twist being that the monsters, that the grups are the onlys when they grow up.
Yeah.
They're stuck in a cycle of their inevitable death.
So, let's see. Looking up a few spots at 45, we have Enterprise's North Star. Another good episode, and another, we've gone to a place that's incredibly Earth-like, and shenanigans ensue, kind of thing. I do realize one day, ages from now, we may end up having to pick topics as flimsy as shenanigans ensue.
Yeah, more than likely. And now our sixth episode on, man, your society is weird.
I mean, they are, though. So many of them.
I've got to say, I think, even though I'm championing for Miri to be higher up on the list, I think North Star is the... Look, I feel like out of the Enterprise episodes we've seen, North Star was definitely one of the strongest. We got some good old-fashioned cowboy shenanigans. We've got Archer and the gang, you know, fighting bigotry. Malcolm shooting to Paul with a stun blast in order to save her is always worth watching.
Oh, some badass shit there.
Yeah, but, you know, it's our heroes ride into town, dress as cowboys, and proceed to F shit up.
Cool. Okay, so if we put this below North Star but above the Vulcan Hello and Battle at Binary Stars...
Yeah.
There's a lot to like, but this is kind of a better Star Trek.
This is a better Star Trek, and it's showing how much Star Trek can do with so little. They might, okay, yes, the hand waving of, oh, this is a parallel Earth, to just kind of hand wave like the sets and then never bring it up ever again.
Look, we've seen 17 episodes of the original series. I've hit a point where I am incredibly comfortable with, like, yeah, sure, it's another very Earth-like planet. Why not? We've seen weirder.
I am a Doctor Who and Blake 7 fan. You can show me a gravel quarry. I'm like, oh yeah, that's 17 different planets in both shows. It is all about verisimilitude. And in an era today, we have people complaining that Andor has bricks. I think it's great that we just watch this
show. Oh, yeah. God.
It's great that we just see a show which, using a set I think I've seen in the 60s Batman, and go, yes, this is an alien world.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure I've said it before here. Just lie to me.
Yeah.
Lie to me convincingly, and I will believe that this is an alien planet. I will believe that we can have a very Earth-like, like an almost identical Earth-like planet. You know, space is big. There's bound to be a few copies out there. It's
space
fine.
Is big and weird, and there are about 15 different alien species that all look like human.
Exactly.
I think we can sell it. We just need to not have to buy, you know, buy a lot of sets.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's fine. So that puts this at spot number 46 on our big list. So our second episode of the evening is Star Trek, the original series, season 3, episode 12, titled Plato's Stepchildren. This aired on the 22nd of November 1968, written by Maya Delinsky and directed by David Alexander. The UK number one hit was Hugo Montenegro with The Good, The Bad and The Ugly, and the US had Hey Jude by The Beatles. I'm generally fairly pro Beatles. Hey Jude, it's fine, but Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, man.
Hey Jude is like, it's no While My Guitar Gently Weeps, which is, you know, one of my favorite Beatles song.
Oh yeah,
but like any cover of The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly is mwah,
oh,
chef's kiss. And then while I listened to that, I had to pull up the Ennio Morricone original to listen to, because there's something vast and epic and sprawling about that tune.
Yeah, it's so good. Just that sense of it. Like, I'm a fairly casual Westerns person, but sometimes that sense of scale and epicness is very good.
But yeah, do you know what's definitely none of that?
Why what, Miles?
Why, it is the Star Trek episode Plato's Stepchildren, which you have to now recap in 5 minutes.
Oh, God. Yeah.
right, I will start you off.
Okay.
I'm Tweedledee, he's Tweedledum, a Star Trek recap we will do. He has 5 minutes, ha ha ha, or else I'll dance the flamenco.
Wow. Okay, so we've got another desperate distress call from a planet, but this one has no life on it. That's weird. Kirk, Spock and Bones beam down, and they find Alexander, who is a little person in an Amdram toga. And there are lots of columns, like ancient Greek style columns around the place. Apparently, this planet's ruled by Parmen, their philosopher king. The people here are Plato's children, or Plato's stepchildren, according to Alexander. And oh, there's the name drop already. The ship was called here because there was a medical emergency. Parmen's only gone and injured his leg, and he needs some help. Being a bit grabby and not very trusting, he telekinetically takes Bones' hypo and injects himself. Alexander mentions something about how these three don't deserve to die, but is made to shove his hand in his mouth. And let's not dwell on that too much more. So this colony, it's themed around ancient Greece, and everyone's gained cool powers. They're not used to physical exertion, let alone injuries. So this little kind of piddling injury for Parmen is really bad. Parmen's missus, Philana, explains that there are no doctors here. And thanks to eugenics, they've been whittled down to about 38 people, all of whom have lived for centuries. You know, it's never great when people say, oh, yeah, thanks to eugenics and literally anything. Anyway,
I feel if this was Space 1999, Koenig would like, nope, we're going back to the Eagle.
Fuck this. Unfortunately, this lot aren't so lucky. Parmen is delirious. He flings things around, including the Enterprise. And Scotty's a bit perplexed by this in the captain's chair. Bones tries knocking Parmen out and is sent flying, rolling dramatically along a wall for a bit. Alexander's also flung and kind of wants Parmen to die, as he reckons the others will finish each other off if that happens. Alexander then shows Kirk, Spock and Bones the fancy guest room and explains that he's basically mocked by everyone for his lack of psychic powers and for his size. He's considered a throwback, but he sees familiarity in the people from Starfleet, and Kirk explains that they're fine without telekinesis, about how size, shape and colour make no difference out there away from Parmen and Plato's stepchildren. No one has power. And Alexander likes the idea and is immediately dragged off by people that do have weird powers here. Bones declares, hey, my solution's worked, and the crew prepare to beam up, but they can't. Parmen wants him to stay and doesn't like Kirk's tone, making him slap himself silly. Parmen then offers up gifts for everyone. Pericles' shield for Kirk, a kithara for Spock, and some scrolls of Greek cures for Bones. This is buttering him up a bit, mainly because Parmen kind of wants to keep Bones, just in case anyone else gets a bit of a boo-boo. Bones doesn't want to stick along, and that doesn't matter, not for Parmen. So now it's time for the nonsense to begin. First, the presents taken away. Then Kirk and Spock given reefs and made to dance and sing about being Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Then Spock's flung aside and Kirk has to crawl about like a worm, hamming it up the whole way. Then he rolls about the place and Spock tap dances around his face, stopping just short of stepping on him. Spock has a bit of a laugh and a bit of a cry. Kirk says, Spock, don't break him. And then he's made to act like a horse and Alexander's made to ride him. Oh, dear God, what have I just witnessed? Anyway, after all this, like, Spock's understandably frozen, like he's buffering or something. He's either startled by the emotions he's been forced to have or by witnessing the horsey ride.
Charlie, Spock is suffering the blue shirt of death.
Oh, so Bones says, fine, he'd be willing to stay, but will the others be allowed to go? Probably not. Alexander says he's endured so much here, thinking the people were gods. But they're just a bunch of cunts, aren't they? He smashes a pot and takes a shard of it to stab Parmen with. Kirk asks, hey, did these guys always have this power? And no, No, it took a few months of eating the native foods to get them.
Oh, no. Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Give me back the scroll.
Okay, fine. It's all right. Their ancient Greek cures evidently didn't serve them well, did they?
No, not at all. Okay. Now, do you want to roll around like neigh like a horsey, or would you like to just repeatedly slap yourself?
I'll repeatedly slap myself.
Okay, all right, here we go.
Oh, dear. Okay, right, I'm ready to go now.
This is far too sadistic for Mary Whitehouse. Okay, are you ready to let the nonsense continue?
Yeah, let's continue the nonsense.
Right, go, nonsense, back on!
Yeah, so, Kirk, Spock, and Bones inject themselves with the powers, the power-giving food kind of things, and Alexander's offered it and refuses. He was immune to it naturally, but even so, Bones could have given him power and has seen what it's done. It's round two, nonsense-wise, and Uhura and Nurse Chapel have been summoned from all the way on the Enterprise for the next wave. They get dressed up for it, then Spock serenades the ladies, and while they're not into it, the crowd kind of are. All four of them dance weirdly, move down to a couple of beds, and then swap back and forth who's paired up with who. Chapel asks Spock to make it stop, and that he says he doesn't have the power to do it. The Platonians are being real smug dicks about all of this. Like, one guy in particular is just a real jerk. They're all heckling with this. And after a bit of a back and forth, Kirk and Uhura kiss. Filana wants them to get on with it. No, not fucking, murdering. Kirk has a good yell at them, calling them half dead, torturing people just to seem superior, and then is made to crack a whip at Uhura while Spock brandishes an iron at Chapel. Alexander goes to shank Parman and gets stopped. Parman's about to have Alexander stab himself, but he can't. Why is that? Kirk has powers now. Yeah, he knows Kung Fu of the mind. And he's twice their power level. I would make a Dragon Ball reference, but we don't get any numerical values, so we're just going to have to assume that it's valid. The pair fight using Alexander and his knife, and Alexander says he doesn't want powers like these guys. He doesn't want to end up like Parman. Parman admits, maybe we've gone a bit weird. This has all gone a bit bad, hasn't it? Yes, Parman, you've all gone a bit wrong. They stop. And the crew beam up with Alexander to show him the world, but also to show him that they're not completely perfect in Starfleet. Kirk ends this with a short joke.
That was 2 minutes and 27 seconds of nonsense.
Yeah, nonsense. Utter nonsense.
Okay, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
So... let's just get right to it first of all.
Okay.
Big list. Entry number 124. Lifters where suffering cannot reap.
Wow. Okay, we're just getting to that. I was going to ask you, you know, these guys are ancient Greek. Like, what culture would you want your colony that will inevitably go mad to be like?
Like whales, boyo.
Okay.
All they'll be doing is arguing over a pint and a pie.
Nice. I'd be tempted to have like Lindisfarne or something, like go a bit folk horror with it.
That'd be kind of nice. Okay, Charlie, can I ask a question for you?
Mm.
Have you ever been to a party where the host demanded that you and someone else kiss?
Luckily, no. These guys are real bad hosts. Like, I have been to places where, like, one party where one of the hosts got in a massive argument with the other and locked herself in the bathroom for the entire rest of the night. But no one's demanded that I kiss anyone during any of the parties. How about you, Ben?
Thankfully, no.
Good. It feels like something you'd see in a rubbish, like, in a bad scene in a teen drama or something.
Yeah, or apparently an episode of Star Trek, the original series.
Apparently so. Yeah, these a lot of characters spend a lot of time as the playthings of some real jerks.
I tried to sum up this episode to Rihanna this morning, and I kind of was like, okay, we have 10 minutes of setup, and then it's 30 to 40 minutes of fucking Amdram nonsense.
My word.
Like, most of these exercises, like, they're pretending to be a horsey. The throwing yourself around the room. I used to do this stuff in drama club when I was a kid.
Yeah, that kind of when Bones gets flung against the wall and like rolls along the wall. That feels like either a kids show or a drama exercise kind of level of exaggeration with it. It's like, okay, is Parman doing that? Like, I can't see Bones getting into it.
No. And I don't know if it was just me. There were some expressions of real shame on our regulars. I mean...
See, I was looking at Spock singing. I was like, does Leonard just want to have a bit of a sing? Like, out of all of these things, maybe he can get away with some dignity intact if he just serenades the ladies a bit.
No.
No, that moment passed when I was singing about being Tweedledee and Tweedledum. Yeah, this was some nonsense. And I like your space castles and your weird stuff. This was some quite particular nonsense.
Although I'm sure a 1,000 slash fics have been written about Spock just having his boot just so close away from Shatner. And there is some real fear on Shatner's. You know what? I'll give it credit to, you know, we don't, sometimes we give Bill Shatner the short end of the stick. But, like, he was game. He was game to have that guy Flamenco right next to his head. And you can see the fear of, if he is one step too close, I'm having to have a nose job. But, you know what, Shatner committed that. He was professional. They could have cut away to a stunt double. We've seen it happen many a time.
Oh, yeah.
But,
yeah. There's definitely that energy of move along home, but this isn't a fresh cast who don't know that this is their career now and are worrying that this is all they have in front of them. This is some people in like the back half of the final season of it who are now being put through all this.
Yeah, I am sure there's a moment when like the Spock's foot is right above Kirk's face that Shatner's thinking, well, I'm going to have to be looking for a new job soon.
Yeah, yeah. You know, how's he been acting towards Leonard lately? You know, given how many friends he made on the cast.
This episode is remembered quite famously as being one of the first, or the first, it's kind of, you know, sometimes it's apocryphal, which it is, of being the first interracial kiss on American TV, American network television. Originally, it was going to be Spock, but Shatner demanded the job to mash face with Nichelle Nichols. You know, let's be honest, like, you know, who would say no?
Well, yeah.
But at the same time, and, you know, it's one of those moments of TV where, you know, Star Trek has been patting itself on the back for 50 years now, but it is being done under duress by both parties, and it is, I would say, as uncomfortable as the Kirk, you know, charming up Miri in the previous episode. I would say the parts where Chapel and Spock have to kiss against both their wills, and Uhura and Kirk have to kiss against both their wills, is just uncomfortable.
It is. It's quite unpleasant for that sort of, yeah, the lack of agency with any of it. And like for the first, or apocryphally, the first interracial kiss on American network TV, it feels quite chastely done and quite like, you know, apparently NBC forbade lip contact, so they had to angle themselves. And you can tell.
Man, I feel like Majel Barrett is giving it, like, she has, like, only about three lines in this episode, just a sequence where she and Kirk have to kiss, and she is playing it for full horror.
Oh, with her and Spock.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, with that whole sense of she is someone that's been pining for Spock, and yet, like, not like this. Like, this is the worst nightmare version of it. That kind of thing where after the first wave of nonsense, of course they went for going, right, okay, we need two women here. Add more to the nonsense. And for the anniversary of their arrival on the planet, laying it all out as some kind of weird performance with everyone just jeering and heckling.
And thankfully it doesn't go too Hellraiser.
Yeah.
I didn't like this episode, but do you know who I felt was the best part of it? Michael Dunn.
Yes, definitely.
Who plays Alexander, who definitely, I would say, seals the show.
Oh, he is so good in this. The conflict, the horror of his part and complicity in this early on, and wanting to get that kind of, to encourage that rebellion against them, wanting to just get these guys off this planet.
Yeah.
You know? And the moments of hope. The scene between Alexander and Kirk, where Kirk is explaining about what life is like out there, and saying about, you know, it doesn't, like, size or colour or anything like that doesn't matter, and there isn't rulers. You know, as much as Parman goes, oh yes, we don't have titles or rulers, he immediately says, he immediately calls himself a philosopher king. So, you fucking hypocrite.
You know, Parman would have a Twitter account and would be pumping some sort of crypto while saying some not vaguely racist Civil War bullshit.
Oh god, yeah, like, he'd definitely be the kind of Greek bust avatar on Twitter.
But just, it's the moment when Alexander just shatters the vase, picks up a bit of pottery, is like, I could kill them. I could shank them, and you don't have to save them. Just let them die. That's what they deserve. And it is one of those moments where you feel like in another episode of Star Trek, he would then be treated as the bad guy because he's going straight to violence as, like, the solution to the problem. And here, like, Kirk's like, no, you're utterly right, but there has to be a better way. It's like, you are justified in wanting to shank them. I want to shank them. Spock, do you want to shank them? I really want to shank them, Captain. But we had to be better than shanking. So shiving them.
Yeah.
But none of that kind of takes away the fact that this might be the episode I've had the least enjoyment in watching for the show.
Yeah, there were some funny moments, but it was all funny bad. Between the performance, and, you know, again, these are actors acting, but what they're doing is such nonsense.
I heard someone refer to this almost lynching. I'm like, no, this isn't, the horror isn't intent, like, it's being played too comedically to be lynching horror. Like, lynching horror is Dean Stockwell mouthing to, like, a Roy Orbison song in Blue Velvet, while Dennis Hopper just leers, and you know the moment the song stops, the violence will begin.
Hmm.
And here it all just feels so... Oh yeah, it's the late 60s. Drugs are probably... It's 1968. Drugs are probably involved somewhere.
Probably. Yeah. So, you said, okay, this is a contender against Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. Our current bottom at 124. Is there anything redeeming about this? Like, is this something where, you know, like, I guess even Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach had some good acting and some lovely sets, even if they were mostly CGI. So even that has some redeeming things. Like, with this, you do have the interracial kiss, and as much as it is one that is forced, it is still a plaster that got ripped off.
Yeah.
And apparently, even with the attempts of making a second version to placate the South, they kept wrecking those cuts and flubbing them so much that they just kept the one for kiss. But you know, like, and if they need a second version, fuck them, basically.
Given how TV operates, you would think that does seem a little bit like we're just embellishing the truth.
Yeah.
You know, given like the time and constraint, like the time and nature and the money that goes into making television.
Hmm.
It's like, what did you just have 20 minutes of just William Shatner just going boom, 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 until the point of Reddit went, right, fuck it, fuck the South.
Hopefully, I'll like to imagine that's the case.
Yeah, the Shatner just going boom,
boom. Yeah. So, yeah, the list then. Like, is this genuinely worse than Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach?
Oh, my God.
So, like, I realise with both of them, I will watch Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach if I'm ever going back to Strange New Worlds. So, I'm not going to skip a Strange New Worlds episode. This one, I probably wouldn't skip out of morbid entertainment, like not out of any quality, but to just go, what the fuck is this, guys? What horsey ride?
Okay, I have a question for you. Mm-hmm. Out of these two episodes of TV, which do you think you could show to your partner and still be in a relationship afterwards? Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's probably Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach out of the two of them.
Yeah,
like, there's one of them that I'm pretty sure we both did watch. Yeah, 106. So yeah, I'm pretty sure we both watched that one. Compared to this, where she just heard the exasperated noises, because I was watching this on a train, trying not to corpse.
Okay. One thing we need to mention.
Mm-hmm.
Shatner's distractedly pointed nipple.
Yeah, that was odd.
At one point, the cast end up in like togas or something, and Kirk is just cut open in such a way to reveal his nipple. And there are moments when it is very pointy, and it just kind of demands attention. Not respect, it demands attention, because it is off-puttingly erect.
Yeah, you mentioned this to me in the chat, and I was like, Shatner's nipple, banned or medical condition?
I asked Rihanna, and she immediately went with medical condition, and Charlie, I'm sorry, I have to tell you this, but you've got Shatner's nipple.
No! Oh my God!
It's the worst case of Shatner's nipple I've seen in 20 years in the medical industry.
The points are cutting through my tops.
Like, do you think like Shatner was like between takes? Shatner was doing a little bit of nipple action. He's like, I'm showing these off. I'm gonna make this. I'm gonna nipple for the stars. This is the nipple that's gonna win Shatner a lifetime Emmy.
You know, this is a big moment for him. So he's gonna want to look good. He's going to want to look for part, and yeah, why not?
If he's going to put this on his showreel, he's going to show off the nipple. But again, it's like, is this the worst episode of Star Trek we have seen for the show thus far?
It's a difficult one with that. Like, when you were mentioning to me about this, feeling like it's a good candidate for it, it's like, it's tricky, because I'm sure there's worse. Obviously, you know, we've not seen everything yet.
No.
And there are some fun moments, but all of it is that kind of...
There are some fun moments and there's good acting. And, you know, I'm going to defend Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach. There's some interesting drama. There's some interesting SF. And there is just it's building up to that moment of dread when you realize, oh, yeah, this is where we're going. Whereas with Plato's Stepchildren, there is a feeling you're sitting there just praying for it to end.
Yeah. And like a mathematically perfect redemption, we've got 120, and that has positives, you know? So I guess going, there are some redeeming features. isn't necessarily going to keep things from the bottom of the list. Going, yeah, there's a lot of real, yeah, a lot of trash here.
I have watched some wank in my life.
Mm-hmm.
I have seen, there are episodes of Blake 7 I would still rewatch over this. Like, the one with, like, the cow people, which no one should want to watch. Or there are some Doctor Who. There are some modern Doctor Who, which are, like, you know, probably the one where the moon's actually a dragon egg, which gives birth to a dragon, which immediately gives birth to an egg. And I'm like, yeah, I'd still watch that over this.
Oh, yeah, that. I wouldn't watch the Peter Kay one.
No. The Peter Kay one has some moments.
No, I don't know.
Or just, like, the one where all the trees grow, and it turns out all the trees are alive and telepathic to save the world from, I don't know, climate destruction, a comet or something.
God, I forgot about that, where they do the happening.
Yeah, or just, you know, the mundanity that is large portions of Flux. I would still watch over Plato Stepchildren, because, yeah, whereas this, it's just like, it's 10 minutes, it's 10, 15 minutes of plot, and then it's 30 minutes of our heroes dancing around like fucking imbeciles.
Well, yeah, I think in the recap, a lot of our audience will have got out of it for level of entertainment that we got out of it, but we had to watch like a 50-minute episode, that kind of thing. So... you know, just to use that horrible, we watched it, so you don't have to. Like, yeah, we endured this, and there are some fun moments if you like a gif of people prattling about, and that's about as good as it gets, really. Between that and the landmark moment, compromised though it is, of the interracial kiss. Yeah, okay. I feel...
yeah, it's like everyone says... Spock's brain is the worst episode of Star Trek, but Spock's brain is so dumb that I'm like, nah, there is salvaging of the dumbness of Spock's brain. This, I don't know how you could salvage this, because it's the 30 minutes of lackluster Amdram that just make you go, no, I can't, turn it off. I'm giving up science fiction. I'm going to watch medical dramas or British crime dramas or British medical crime dramas.
Oh, God. You don't need to do that to yourself, Miles.
Please, turn this off. I'll watch Hollyoaks, anything.
Wow. Okay, so with that impassioned plea, rather than have you watch, you know, friends don't let friends watch Hollyoaks. So that means, on that note, that Plato's Stepchildren is our 125th on our list for 125. Again, if you want to see them prattling about, just go to Tenor or one of the GIF sites, because it's not worth the whole episode.
Go to YouTube.
Yeah, there's bound to be fun clips.
Now,
like Movie Nights or someone's bound to have covered it.
Yeah. Now, one last question. This is Lift Us Where Suffering Cannot Reach has been our bottom list contender for quite a while.
Yeah.
Do you think that we will replace the number one spot first or the 125 spot first?
Oh, dear. See, we've got Star Trek 4 coming in at some point, and I know I am very excited.
And we have Star Trek 5 coming in at some point after that.
Yes, yeah, that is a worryingly good point.
Eventually we will get to Star Trek Nemesis.
Yeah. I think with that in mind, and knowing some of the things we've got on our slate coming up, I'll say cautiously optimistically, our number one spot might get replaced first. Just because... you know, we've got some more of these banned episodes. We've got some Halloween stuff, and I always love some spooky shenanigans. We've got our Unification trilogy. So, yeah, hopefully things will go all right. And, yeah.
We've got many, many more episodes of Enterprise.
True.
And eventually, Quark's sex change operation is awaiting us.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we got that. Yeah, so what do we do next time? Well, it's probably more banned episodes, because we've still got three more of those to check out. This has definitely been a fun one, even with replacing our worst on the list. If you like what we do and you want to request any specific episodes or anything like that, you can always go to our Ko-fi page at ko-fi.com/casualtrek. If you want to know when episodes are out or just see general blathering, sometimes about Star Trek, then our Casual Trek account on Blue Sky is casualtrek.bsky.social. Mine is skyshark.bsky.social, where I'll mostly be talking about X-Men, 2000 AD and RPGs. And Miles, what's yours?
My Blue Sky is milesreedlibato.bsky.social. And then you can always check out my blog at mareedlibato.wordpress.com.
Yeah, my blog, fakedtales.com, hasn't been updated much lately, but there are things going on, so hopefully soon it will. Maybe even when this airs. Yeah, and with that, go and do something that will get banned by the BBC.
Yep. Do something that will, you know, piss off Mary Whitehouse, like be an atheist or kiss someone of the same gender as you.
Yeah. Just, you know, don't flamenco around your mate's face, not unless they ask.
And whatever you do, just don't, you know, don't do horsey rides.
Yeah. Yeah. Think of your back. It's going to be a nightmare. Don't do horsey rides. But do go and do a Starfleet.
And don't worry, Shatner's nipple isn't catching. Yet.
You have been listening to Casual Trek, a Nerd and Tie podcast, presented by Charlie Etheridge Nunn and Miles Reed Lobato. Music by Alfred Etheridge Nunn. Edited by the hosts and by Rihanna Reed Lobato. Star Trek is owned by Paramount. Not us. Not yet.